Welcome to the Episcopal Church of the Redeemer's Sermon Podcast.
The readings appointed for this sermon are from the book of the prophet Jonah, chapter 3, verse 10 through 4 and 11, Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 1, verse 21 through 30, the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 20, verse 1 through 16, and Psalm 145, verse 1 through 8.
God grant us serenity to accept the things that we cannot change, courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Please be seated. Well, Liz, I'm really glad that you sang today and sang, "I am yours and you are mine." I don't know if you all could hear it, "I am yours and you are mine." That's pretty much the whole sermon I'm about to preach, so I could just sit down, because "I am yours and you are mine" is the goal for us to get to an understanding of. I've been here for 4 years in Cincinnati, and I still very much feel like a newcomer. I think that's part of the deal of moving to Cincinnati. If you didn't go to high school here, you are still new. No matter how long you've been here, you are still new. And those are the rules. So 4 years in, I very much still feel like a new person. And of course, I've built some beautiful relationships, some really wonderful friendships in these last 4 years. And in these last couple of months, we have lost some pretty important people. People, I should say, that are important to my heart, people that I have gotten to know and have been meaningful to me. And it's strange, because you don't feel like a new person when someone that you love dies. But something happened that reminded me both how connected we are to one another and how new I am to the lives of these people. To you all. So in June, we lost a dear friend and a dear member of this congregation named Chet Cavalier. Chet was on my search committee that helped decide to bring me out to Cincinnati, and was one of the first people that I ever met here. And then just last week, our dear friend and sister Janice Lubin died. Janice was, for me, an absolute spark plug of energy and what we've affectionately heard people say recently, good trouble. Janice was good trouble. Janice was the kind of person who would say exactly the kind of thing that everyone would go, "Oh, I didn't think anyone would actually say that." And it was always exactly the thing that needed to be said. Chet was also someone who loved good trouble. He would always make a point of speaking up. But see, what I think about when I think about Chet is I think about how we never left each other's sight or got off the phone with each other without him saying, "I love you," first. And I'm saying to him, "I love you back." And Janice, when I think of her, I think of that good trouble, but I think about her sitting right next to me in Bible study and asking the tough questions. And always, always responding with thoughtfulness, but also with a sense of affection and kindness towards me, which always made me feel like maybe I kind of had an idea of what I was doing, which is, you know, in any job that you have, it's always good when you have a moment where you feel competent. That's always nice, right? But something happened in these deaths, and it's actually something really simple you might not think about. But in both cases, we had some private outdoor burial ceremonies for Chet and for Janice. And in both cases, when I looked at the bulletin and I saw the picture on the front, they both looked like I didn't recognize the way they looked, because they were pictures from before I had met them 4 years ago. Chet lived to be, I believe, 96. And it could be 98, but I'm pretty sure it was 96. And I knew him for 4 years. Which means there were 92 years that Chet walked this earth that I did not know him. And those of us who know and love Janice know that Janice was, that she had Parkinson's disease, and it ravaged her body over time. And the pictures in her bulletin are these pictures of her before she was ever wheelchair bound, and when she's walking around, and I believe you all were in Ireland, and you can see her walk, or Scotland, and you can see her walking around. And her spirit is the same. But I didn't know her that way. And the picture of Chet is from a few years back, and he looked completely different. And I didn't know him that way. And all of a sudden, I felt very humbled and almost sort of like, who am I to get to have been, to known love with this person? Who have I to have been able to be in love with people like Chet and Janice? To have not known them for so much of their lives, and yet to have experienced real and honest and lasting love and belonging with these two powerful, wonderful people. I really genuinely felt like there's so much of them I don't know. And yet I was given this honor, this privilege of being in relationship with them. To know love with people. Now imagine if I told that story about having the opportunity, the experience of getting to know and love and be loved by Janice. And Gary said, her husband said, well, hey, you weren't there for most of it. How come you got to have love with her? That's not fair. I earned it. I earned that love. You, what did you do? You just got here. Or what if Chet's family, who took such good care of him, especially in his later years, who worked so hard, so diligently to be there for him and with him, and who knew him through not only the beautiful times, but the dark times and the hard times, looked at me and said, he said, I love you to you? What? You just got here, Duvall. And you get to have that guy say, I love you? I was in that guy's life for 65 years, and you get that? Do you see how twisted that would be, how strange that would be? The reality is that whenever we show up in someone's life, whenever we show up in each other's lives, if we have the privilege, if we have the honor, if we have the joy of experiencing real and true and honest love and friendship, then we understand and are participating in the work of God in this world. And I love this parable today. I love the story that Jesus tells. Because what Jesus is trying to do is orient us around the reality that our lives are founded in the loving relationship of God. And it doesn't matter when we show up. Because that we show up means we get to be part of God's work of love in this world. And the people in the story are preoccupied with who deserves what, with who deserves how much, with this person just got here and I've been here all day, what is that about? But I want us to imagine what it would be like to be the new person, to be the person who's late to the game, to be the person who only worked 1 hour and wasn't sure if they were going to be given wages enough to take care of themselves and their families. For the person who sat all day wondering, why hasn't anyone hired me? Why hasn't anyone picked me? What about me? To the person who showed up new, showed up late to the game. If you're that person, if you're a person who got to know someone in their 96 years, you got to know them only for 4 of them, you're grateful for the 4. Because you don't count love and you don't measure relationship in a quantifiable way. You don't say, I got this much love, but this person got this much love. Well, sometimes you do. And what Jesus tells us today is, that's not love. When we measure love like that, we do not understand the heart of God. Do you know who understands the heart of God? Jonah, the prophet that we heard Kelly read today from Jonah. He understands the heart of God and he doesn't like it. He is annoyed with God. I grew up being taught that Jonah didn't go to Nineveh at first because he was scared because they were Israel's enemies and he was scared of what they would do to him. But Jonah himself contradicts that teaching. Jonah goes to Nineveh. And when he gets there, he barely says half a prophecy and the whole town of over 100,000 repents and changes their ways and God relents from punishing them and saves them. And Jonah is angry about it. And he says, see, isn't this what I said when I was back home? This is why I didn't want to come here. I knew you were a God who was slow to anger and full of steadfast mercy and love and patience and ready to forgive and relent from punishing. Jonah isn't scared of the Ninevites. He's mad that they aren't going to get what they deserve. He's mad because he thinks they deserve punishment and death. And God says, because they have turned towards me, towards the love relationship for which they were made, they will know love, they will know healing, and they will know salvation. And this drives Jonah mad, the same way it drives the people mad in Jesus' parable, because they are consumed by the idea of us earning and deserving what we get. Thank God we don't get what we deserve. Genuinely, thank God we don't get what we deserve. And our human obsession with getting, with everyone getting what they deserve is killing us. Our human obsession with thinking that it's going to work out in such a way where you have to earn every aspect of your life, including earning the right just to be here, earning having a home, earning healthcare. Earn it. Deserve it. And if mine's better than yours, I deserve it and you don't. I've been wondering this whole week as I've been mulling over the story, the parable that Jesus teaches. I wonder who deserves COVID. Right? And who deserves not to get it? I had a dear friend who tested positive this week. And thank God so far, he's asymptomatic, but he tested positive. And I said, tell me something. How do you feel? And he said, honestly, I feel ashamed. And I don't know why. I didn't do anything. I don't know how. But I got it immediately. I said, that is how I would feel. Because I would say, like, what did I do to deserve this? And what will people think about me? They'll go, I thought Phil was trying to keep us all out of church so that we could all be safe. And then he went off and did something risky. Can you imagine getting sick and your first thought is shame? That is because we live our lives thinking that everything happens according to what we deserve. But the reality is so much deeper than that, so much bigger, so much richer than we could possibly fathom. And it's right there in front of us, and Jesus has been saying it for over 2,000 years, and eventually maybe we'll hear it. That we have a God who is gracious, who seeks first our healing, our life, our love, our hearts to be reconciled and cared for, who seeks for us to know community and connection, who seeks for us to understand our belongingness, our belovedness, our inherent beauty as humans. God seeks for us to recognize the fact that we are created by God in love and that so is everyone else, and we get to live into that love. And we are sitting here trying to figure out how to quantify it and try to figure out who deserves what and how much of love and how much of life and goodness each person, including myself, should get. If you're like Jonah trying to figure this out, trying to quantify it, it's enough to make you want to die. That's what Jonah said. Is it good for you to be angry, God says? And Jonah says, yes, it's good enough that I should die. He would rather die than have to understand that kind of grace, because it means he would have to change his understanding of who deserves what and how to make sure people pay for what they've done. To accept the grace of God is to allow yourself to be completely changed, and your ideas of how the world works they must be transformed if you accept what Jesus has said to us today and what the prophet Jonah already knew even before that. Maybe it's good enough for me to die, Jonah says. And this is where Paul's reading from the Philippians comes in and helps us so dearly. Because Paul actually says something very similar. He says, you know what? To live is loss, and to die, at least I get to be with Christ. So if you really pay attention to the reading from Philippians today, I don't know if you, Jimmy, basically Paul says, you know, to live or to die is a toss-up for me. It's a toss-up right now. He said, it could go either way. Put it in front of me, life or death, I don't know. But Paul then says, but since I'm here, I'm going to work with you and for you. I don't know who deserves what or when death will come for me. But in the meantime, I am alive, which means I am here to do the work. And I don't care what time you showed up for the work. If you show up too, we are doing it together. I don't know what the outcome of our work will be in terms of, will I produce the right amount of justice, freedom, and peace? Will I personally participate in the work enough that it is enough that I've earned my status as Christian, as beloved? But the gospel today tells me to get rid of that fear, to drop my judgment, to cease from trying to figure out who deserves what, and simply to roll up my sleeves while I have my breath in my lungs and do the work God has given me to do, trusting that in that work I will be participating with you, participating with God, in the work that needs to be done in this world, the work of love and healing, of freedom and peace, of justice and reconciliation. This is the work that God gives us to do, and this is the work we participate with God in. In just a few moments, you're going to see a video of us baptizing Owen and Roland. Are they too late to the game? They just got here. They just got to the church. Is it too late? We've lived so much and we're so scared of what's next. Did they show up too late, or is there a part for them to play? We share with them in their baptism, and we stand with them in their baptismal covenant. And that is our way of saying, you have a place, and I have a place, and we all have a part in the work of God's kingdom. There is no early. There is no late. There is only belonging. I belong to you. You belong to me. And thanks be to God and Jesus Christ, we all belong to each other, and we belong on this earth, and we belong to God. Don't worry about who deserves what. Let's get together and do the work of belonging.